So we've been talking about the question, we just started talking about kfiyah by mitzvahs in general, and then we started considering, is that the premise of the idea of kfiyah beget? We know from the various gemaras that on the one hand, a get has to be given willingly, ratzon is a component of get, it's also a component of karbanos, yet for both of them, apparently kfiyah is possible, both for karbanos and for getting. And we saw some gemaras in Maseches Ksubis, which laid out a number of cases, according to Chazal, where kfiyah is called for. We have yet to fully flesh out, are there other cases that are not in the Gemara? That's something that we'll have to get to more, but we know at least from the Bavli and a little bit of the Yerushalmi that there are a number of cases where kfiyah is a possibility, despite the fact that ratzon is required. And we saw a couple of points about that. We saw that the Gemara in Bava Basra, a very important Gemara, compares it to selling an item, where when you sell an item, even if you're forced to do so, at the end of the day, you decide to sell it, and therefore the sale is valid, for whatever extent, whatever purposes that means, and that the Gemara considers at least comparing get to that, even though we saw that they're not fully comparable, that get actually requires ratzon, which mecher does not necessarily require, and that could be why the Rambam invokes the phrase rotza ani in his description. And we saw that the Rambam has a very, very famous line quoted, even many non-Jews are very familiar with this Rambam because of its frequent citation in the context of this issue and its application maybe to other areas of halacha, so very, very widely cited Rambam, that the reason kfiyah works, we've been using the term the pintaliyid, that inside there is a ratzon to do mitzvot, and that ratzon is obscured by whatever yetzahara is that's getting in the way, and therefore all the pressure does is it removes the yetzahara, and the inner ratzon comes out. So we have been focusing a little bit specifically on that position of the Rambam, which we'll continue to do a little bit today as well. We saw that the question was raised in the Rambam by the Chavos Yar, if you recall, just to quickly recap this point, that the Chavos Yar says, how could it be that we're describing the scenario that the pressure takes away the Yetzirah and allows his true Ratzon to come out? That might be true if he had reason to think that the pressure was going to be over, that the Makos were done. But what's really the case is that he would not give the get if he thought the Makos were over. He only is doing so because he believes they're going to come again, and he's scared of that. So therefore, it's not that the Yetzirah has been removed. It's his fear of future beings that is making him do it. So why is that not simply onus? Why is that not essentially duress? And therefore, the Chavos Yar, for his part, disagreed with the Rambam and said that the purpose of Rotzani is there to establish that he would do it even if he would know that there were no future beatings, and that that works because it's on the surface a credible statement. Because since he doesn't really have a rational reason to stay married, he's not getting anything out of this marriage at this point, so it makes sense that a person would be willing to do that, even though this individual hasn't shown himself to be so rational, but it's a rational possibility. So that's what the Rotza Ani is about, and that's why it works. And it's not because of this mitzvah svara of the Rambam. And we quoted from the Sefer, Elul Shekofin Lahotzi, who defends the Rambam and says that you could paint the picture where you could understand why his point makes sense. Even if the Chavos Yar's premise is true, that he's only doing it because of future beatings, and if he had known that there'd be no future beatings, he won't do it, still the Rambam svara holds true. And he gave a mashal of somebody who's kidnapped. Right? Somebody is kidnapped by these hostage takers, and his friends come and start pounding on the kidnappers. So then he's able to run away. Now, if the friends would stop pounding on the kidnappers would then resume their kidnappery, and they'd go back and get the guy again, and he'd be thrown back into jail. So that's still the case, but it doesn't mean that while he's free, he's not acting of his free will. So if the Yetzirah and this Mashal are the kidnappers, so yes, it requires constant pounding, and if you stop the pounding, the Yetzirah comes back. But still, that doesn't mean that at the moment that the pounding is going on and the Yitzhahara is distracted, that it's not the free will coming out. And then we discussed that there were some Rishonim who seemed to feel that the Rambam's logic would not work for a Mishumud, or somebody is, let's say, a convert out of Judaism, and has indicated that he's not interested in doing mitzvahs in general, so then maybe he has extinguished the Pintaliyed, maybe there is no longer that inner rutzen to do mitzvahs, and maybe this whole logic wouldn't hold true. That's how some Rishonim read the Rambam. Beis Yosef quotes a discussion about this. And you could disagree, as many did. Many said, no, everybody's got the Pintaliyed, even the convert out of Judaism still has a little rutzen inside of him that we have to free, and that the same logic we could apply to one of the area, we could apply to throwing out the entire Torah, the same logic applies. But nonetheless, there were those who disagreed, so he explained the disagreement by saying that maybe the Eved Mashal, the captive Mashal that we gave before, so there are people who, once they are put into slavery, so they get used to it, they're happy that way, and even once you come and beat up their captors, they're still not going to want to go out. And maybe that's what the Mashumet is like, according to this, somebody who has decided he's happy this way, he's not interested in all the mitzvahs, and therefore maybe the pressure is not going to work. And that's essentially what we were up to. Okay, so far so good? So let's just continue a little bit to see some Rishonim who agree with the Rambam's position, and some Rishonim who seem to disagree with the Rambam's position. And for the most part, I even put these on the Mar Makomos because they're a little bit more obscure and harder to find. So we'll just talk about them a little bit outside. But you find a few cases of Rishonim where they seem to essentially be saying the Rambam Svara. So for example, the Tosfos Rit in a number of places. The Tosfos Rit in his Chidushim Tegitin, and also as he's quoted in the Yoizaruah, and a few other places, the Tosfos Rit essentially says the Rambam's position. In discussing a topic that we'll get up to soon, the issue of Moredes, that big Mar Mokum from this morning, which you'll get to see, the Gemara talks about a woman who rebels against the marriage. As we'll see, it's possible for either the husband or the wife to have a status of rebelling against the marriage. It's not to be interpreted as rebelling against the spouse, they're rebelling against the marriage itself. So if a woman has the status of Moredes, so then it's a discussion how exactly that's dealt with. As you see, the Gemara talks about penalizing her through reducing the ksuba, then eventually divorcing her. So when does she get divorced? How does she get divorced? That's a whole discussion. And then the Gemara distinguishes between different reasons why the woman may rebel against the marriage. So in the later Rishonim, they quote that there was an institution of the Gaonim that if the woman says, Mois alai, that I'm just disgusted by the husband, I don't want to be with him because he turns me off, I don't like him. So if that's the case, so then that the Gaonim made a takana that he should force the husband to divorce him. So there the Tosfos Rit explains that that is a function of the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim, that Chachamim have declared that that's going to be the case, and therefore that is the ground for kfir. So it seems like the Tosfos Rit here is expressing this position that the Rambam says, that the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim is the basis for kfir. So when you have even later Chachamim, when you have the Gaonim coming and making an institution, that itself will create the basis for kfir. You find also that Marach or Zeruah quotes from Rishonim that if you have a situation of Safek Kiddushin, a situation where it's not clear whether there actually is marriage or not, so to resolve the Safek, the din is the husband has to divorce the wife. So there also the basis is the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim. And there they make reference to the Gemara that we mentioned in Bava Basra, where that's brought up as a possible factor. There, the Gemara mentions it kind of agav, if you recall, just to refresh your memory in the context of the Gemara wants to know if, when it comes to selling an item, you're pressured to sell the item, is that considered to be a valid sale? So the Gemara says, well, look, if you're pressured to give a get, so that's a valid get. And the Gemara says, well, maybe it's different. Maybe there's the mitzvah l'shmo l'divrei chachamim. So it's not clear that the Gemara is saying that's why it works, just that that's the difference between the two. And that here again, you have Rishonim citing that, who seem to therefore be agreeing with the Rambam, but that's essentially what's happening. In addition to this, you have the Tashbetz. Tashbetz, in his Tshuvas, and Chelik Beis, and Simen Reish Ches, and in a few other places, the Tashbetz also essentially expresses this idea that it's the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim that is creating the basis for the kfir. So this Tashbetz, he expresses the same principle in another Tshuva, in Chelik Beis, and Simen Ches, where he talks about a situation, and this is something we're going to get into more detail about, because these are very, very relevant discussions for some of the common day scenarios that we find. So our Mishnah, the Mishnah in the Sefer Tzuvos, if you recall, when it listed people who are forced to give a get, so it talks about, let's say if somebody has an unbearable breath situation. Their breath is so bad because of an illness that they have that it's simply impossible for the wife to stay with him. So there, the Mishnah talks about being kofa again. So the Tashbetz talks about, so let's say he has an obnoxious personality and he's very difficult and he makes life impossible. So should we be kofa again in that case? So his position was, yes. And he also makes reference to Yerushalmi. This I probably should have put on the Marakumas. I don't think I ever did. To Yerushalmi in Paraktes, Halachates of the Sefer Gittin, where the Yerushalmi wants to say a Kal V'chomer, that if bad breath is a good enough reason, so then we have other situations which seem to be a Kal V'chomer from that. For example, if the husband says he's not going to financially support his wife, I'm not going to provide her with food. I'm not going to provide her with a basic living. So the Gemara suggests that that should be a Kal V'chomer. So then we should be able to force to get there as well. So says the Tashbetz. There you have it. Same kind of Kal V'chomer. You could say if he's obnoxious, he makes life impossible for her. So then you could assume that we have to be kofa get in that situation also. But in the context of saying this, he says that there were great gedolim who disagreed, but we're not katlikanim, the expression from the Gemara, we're not the reed cutters, we're not so shabby ourselves, we also have the right to an opinion, and therefore we're pretty confident, says the Tashbetz, that kfiya is appropriate. So, what exactly is that machlokus that he's alluding to? So, here again, it's discussed in the Sefer El Shikof and Lahotzi that he's probably talking about the Rush. Right, the Rush in his Chuvis, this was on Mamar Komos earlier, if you had a chance to see, right, the Rush in his Chuvis in Klal Mem Gimel. So, the Rush discusses there a similar kind of situation where the husband is obnoxious and feels that we can't apply kfir. What options are open to us, we'll have to discuss. But as far as kfir is concerned, so he's not ready to apply kfir because it's not among the cases mentioned in the Gemara. He feels that we can only do kfir on the cases mentioned in the Gemara. And it's a very tricky balance because if kfir is inappropriate, and we use kfir, so then we risk a get mu'usa. This is one of the major flashpoints of controversy today, that we have to figure out all of the issues that come up today. This is going to become one of the major issues, that whatever pressure is being exerted towards the husband, does it rise to the level of kfir? That itself is not necessarily clear. And if it is kfir, so then we have to figure out, is kfir justified? In which case, fine, let it be kfir, no problem. Or is kfiya not justified, in which case it looks like that might be an invalid get, a get ma'usa. So that's a two-prong evaluation for any method that you may see taking place today. And both of those questions have to be addressed very seriously. So the Rosh assumes that we can only use kfiya in the cases where the Gemara talks about it, where the Gemara allows it. So apparently the Kal v'chomer of the Gemara Gittin he felt was very limited, that that's talking about basic sustenance, the ability to survive is dependent on being fed, so maybe that's something that's comparable to the cases that the Gemara lists. But other than that, we don't have the ability to make a Kal v'chomer, we don't have the ability to go beyond the items listed in the Gemara, and kfiya is not going to work. So, what happened to the mitzvah l'shmor d'var chachamim? Right. So, if the chachamim of that door say that they have to get divorced, according to the Rosh, why can't we employ kfiya? And why the Tashbetz seems to believe we can, and the Rosh not? So, what's that machlokas about? What do you think that machlokas is about? Ari?
Sounds like if it's we can only ever use the cases that are in the Mishnah.
Right, that's what the Russians be saying, but why is he saying that? What happens to why is a mitzvah to listen to the chachamim of that generation also? So why isn't that mitzvah enough?
Is that the sole distinction that the Gemara makes that distinction? Is that the reason that kfiya would work in that case, or is it only among the factors?
So that seems to be the question, right? So it seems to be the Rambam clearly is resting himself on the mitzvah idea. That because there's a mitzvah and everybody wants to do mitzvahs, so therefore that becomes activated to the pressure. But this is an indication that there's some Rishonim who don't accept this. And that the Rosh does not seem to be satisfied with using the mitzvah idea as the svara, and therefore it could be assumed that the Rosh disagrees. That's it.
We mentioned that there might need to be smicha in order to be able to affect these things.
So that's a good question also. So we know that you do need smicha in order to do kriya, but we know also that the Gemara tells us that the principle of shlichus ayhu is enough to transfer the power of smicha into contemporary bat din. So that is a fair question on the surface. Probably isn't the issue at hand though because of that. One could say, what exactly is the mitzvah l'shmor d'var chachamim? One could say, what are the boundaries that based on the pasuk of Lo Sasser, so what does Lo Sasser extend to? It could be that's the issue. But it seems like the Rosh is not ready to rest all of kfiya on a principle of there being a mitzvah obligation. Now, when the Tashbetz throws in this expression, well, you know, we're not katlikani, you know, we're not reed cutters. So, as he points out here, the Elish quote from the Hosi, that what the Tashbetz is apparently doing by saying that is, what's he saying? He's not just feeling defensive all of a sudden. It's not the kind of thing he would say in any machlokas. Is it the case that every time somebody disagrees with me, they say, well, listen, I want you to know, I'm most likely myself, so I'm also entitled to an opinion. So, why does he say it here, Davka? Right, why did Tashbetz all of a sudden, in any machlokas that he could have, all of a sudden, in this machlokas, he says, well, there are people who disagree with me, but, you know, I'm no schlepper, so, therefore, I say what I want to say. Are you a comment? Okay, are you?
That if he's using the principle of mitzvah l'shmor d'var chachamim, then he's trying to say, we are chachamim.
Exactly, right? He's explaining the power to take this particular position. And he's saying that this position is based on the fact that the Chachamim are commanding the kfiya, and therefore my position, says the Tashbetz, that this is a case that justifies it, so that's enough to validate the kfiya in of itself. Again, these positions are going to be very important in terms of some of the future questions we're going to decide and going to discuss rather over the next few days as far as when is kfiya going to become appropriate or not. And what exactly is the role of Beis Din in evaluating the situation? So if the Chachamim of that door decide that this should be separated, so then maybe that itself is enough to justify kfiya. So that's apparently going to be a major machlokas here, and that seems to be what the Tashbetz is invoking. Now, just parenthetically, this is a point we're going to have to get to a little bit more. So I mentioned a few minutes ago that the Tosfos Rid and others said that because the Gaonim made an institution that when the wife says, Mo'is Salai, he's disgusting to me, that they could be kofa in that case. So that may or may not be the position of the Rambam. We'll have to see that in a little bit more detail. The Rambam says that Mo'is Salai is a reason to be kofa get, and other Rishonim disagree. We'll get into this topic in a lot more detail soon. But just parenthetically, just in this context, so that may or may not be what we just said from the Tosfos Rid. The Tosfos Rid is saying that because the Gaonim made an institution that we should be kofa, that creates a mitzvah, and therefore we can be kofa based on the mitzvah. Is that also how the Rambam sees it? Maybe, maybe not. It could be that he sees the Mo'is Salai as working based on a later takana, or it could be he understands that midin Gemara, that that's what the Gemara is telling you, that this is also its own independent justification for kviya. So we'll have to discuss that in more detail, but just to be aware that that's an issue. But at least as far as the Tosfos Rid, what he's essentially saying here is that because it was a rabbinical enactment, that rabbinical enactment that provokes the mitzvah l'shmo d'ibur chachamim, and that's going to work. So we see here, apparently, this seems to be now in machlokas, the Rambam on the one hand, and a number of Rishonim who are in his camp, Tosfos Rid, Tashbetz, Marachor Zeruah, a few others, maybe against the Rush. And in this case, the key issue then being that the Rush doesn't necessarily hang his hat, as far as Kli is concerned, on the mitzvah l'shmo d'ibur chachamim. So what is it then? What is it, according to the Rush, that's going to be the basis for kfiya? What other possibilities could there be? How could kfiya work if it's not based on the mitzvah to listen to chachamim? So we'll have to...
Right? Isn't it just the specific cases?
Right. So according to it is the specific cases of the Gemara, so what? So what made those cases work? Those cases been at Torah, you know, what makes those cases, how did those cases all of a sudden allow for kfiya if it's not based on a mitzvah, per se?
Could it still be based on the source of mitzvah? Could you use something like kfiya?
So that we discussed a little bit before Pesach. It's good to have an opportunity to revisit that. So that was the Chassam Sofer's suggestion, and maybe the Hatha Kamocha could be a mitzvah, and therefore that could be the mitzvah. So we mentioned a couple of objections to that position. Also, it's unclear where that would be different. You know, either we're saying that the kfiya is based on the mitzvah to divorce, and then the question is, well, what is that mitzvah? That mitzvah could either be the mitzvah to listen to the chachamim who say to divorce, or v'yahavta recha kamocha. But it sounds like the Rush is saying neither of those. He's saying that it's not based on a mitzvah, it's based on something else. Yes, sir?
Just a general principle of giving a get. I don't know if it's an effort you have, but there's a whole, you're denying. If he's saying he's on this at all, in this case?
Not necessarily, but what he seems to be saying is that it's not the mitzvah that does it. In fact, he may very much not be saying there's no mitzvah. Maybe there is a mitzvah. Presumably he agrees. I say presumably because you could argue, but let's assume for now that he agrees that there is a mitzvah. And it's clear in the Shulchan Aruch also, as we discussed, that there are two tiers. There is a tier of kfiya and a tier of mitzvah. So it seems like some of the Rishonim don't feel like the mitzvah is what does it. That you could have a mitzvah and still not have kfiya. So it has to be that they disagree with the Rambam. The Rambam is clear the mitzvah is the operating element. And it seems like the Rush is saying something else. There's something else going on. There is another machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, which I can give you the Mar Makomos to look up. Again, it was a judgment call as to what they put on for today. This is a little bit graphic, but it's relevant just to understanding another issue here. There is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban in a different area which might be relevant. The Rambam writes that if somebody is forced under duress to engage in an act of arayos, let's say a man is forced to engage in an act of arayos, so that man is liable. He's still chayiv even though he was forced, based on the premise that the man cannot be involved physically in the act of arayos unless he's willing. Saying kishrei el midas, he has to decide that that's, he has to be physically prepared to engage in the act. And therefore, that constitutes ratzon. While the Ramban disagrees. And the Ramban says that even though physically he was able to prepare himself for the death, but he did so under duress, and therefore that constitutes a lack of ratzon, that is onus, and therefore he's not liable. The Or Sameach, in the Sefer Meshech Chochma, Shem Chumash, and others, assume that these two Rambams are L'shitasa. These two Rambams are saying the same thing. Anybody want to explain how? How is the Rambam reflecting a consistent position here? Are you?
When someone is willing to do something, no matter... no matter if someone else is forcing him, it can still be considered ratzon, because in this case, we would say that his inner will, he has to mentally prepare himself, he has to mentally say that he wants to do it. So it's similar to Rosa in this case as well, because he actually does the act. But now, as I was saying it, but he's to do a sin doesn't seem to be the inner pintaliyid.
Right, so you're going to get very specific in the Rambam position. Go back to the pintaliyid, so there's going to be a machlokas now between the pintaliyid and his physical reaction.
So, as I was saying.
Right, but the point, the base, basically the way it's broken down.
What was the question? Sorry.
The question is, how are these two Rambams reflecting a consistent position? That, especially as highlighted by the fact that the Ramban disagrees with this Rambam, by the Arayos set. That, essentially, what the Ramban is saying
like
is that...
Sorry? The guy would be
high
according to Rambam.
According to Rambam, right. So, right, exactly. So the Rambam, as the Or Sameach points out, the Rambam in both places is maintaining a consistent approach here. What's the consistent approach? That at the end of the day, if you decide to do something, you decide to go along with it, cooperate, the fact that we had to push you out the door, so to speak, is not relevant. At the end of the day, it's your rutzah. So, if you somebody beat you up and you gave a get, and you said at the end, rotsani, and you gave it, that's called rotsa. The fact that somebody beat you up to that point, that's not going to take away from it being willing. So too, if somebody says, I'll beat you up unless you do this act of arayos, and they beat the guy like crazy, and then at the end of the day, he does it, and he decides, okay, he's ready and he does it, so then that's still considered to be willing. So that final act, at the moment, he was doing it willingly, he was cooperating, that act of cooperation is considered to be ratzon. Even if, to get to that point, you had to be schlepped against your will, that doesn't take away from the fact that you are still the balbast at that moment of action.
But why does it not say that it's the same issue as kfiyah mitzvah? Meaning, at the end of the day,
it seems it is the same issue.
But deep down, he really doesn't want to be doing this, but he is doing it, meaning... Yes, he got to it to that point.
Right, that was Arya's point.
Right,
actually, if you
so
want to talk
fine.
About good
yeah.
and bad, well, good and bad, well.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question. And I think there are a few other theories you could also ask about this a little. Maybe you have a chance to explore a little bit. But without entering into that question, which is a legitimate one, saying the point is if you could break things down and say, right now you're cooperating. Right? The fact that you were pushed to this point, we don't pay attention to. So, Lagabe giving the get, you cooperated at the last minute, you did it willingly. And Lagabe, the act of Arayos, it would only work if you were physically cooperating. So, therefore, both of those are considered willing. And the fact that somebody pressured you to do A and B doesn't change it. In both cases, that's considered to be your ratzon. While the Ramban apparently disagrees, the Ramban says no, that if somebody else is bringing you to the stage, even if at the moment of the action you're cooperating, that cooperation doesn't change the fact that it was against your will. Still under duress, and therefore that's not going to count.
So, could you cut another Ramban? Could you categorize that as a rayos mosa?
Yeah, well, you don't have to get that phrase. We say that it's an onus, a patra, because it's an onus.
Okay.
you know, that's against your will.
The Rambam has to have a concept of under duress. It's not counted in certain cases.
Correct. Right. So what exactly is the concept of duress is also interesting. We'll have to see how much more we can explore about that, because there are some cases which you might think may pose a question to this episode. But at least as far as just focusing on this one point, that how much can you ignore what happened beforehand, it seems like the Rambam maybe is consistent in saying that at the end of the day, you are cooperating, that's Ratzon, and we're not going to focus on the pressure beforehand. Right?
Also, according to this, does the Rambam really need Ratzon in order to be able to affect this? Because all that matters is that we expect that at the moment of his action, it was the Ratzon.
Which is a question we saw a little bit before Yantiv. That what exactly is the need for saying Rotsani then, ultimately? So apparently the Rotsani is to establish that it is willing, but there were those who questioned it. So the Abinazir questioned it and explained it for other reasons. But it's not so obvious what exactly the words Rotsani are meant to accomplish. That was a topic we looked at a little bit. So it seems like the Ramban may also be in a different camp from the Rambam. Right? That the Ramban may also have to give you a different logic, because this is coming at the disagreement from a different point than the Rashi mentioned a few minutes ago, but that the Ramban is not going to be able to say that it's called Ratzon, because ultimately if you were schlepped to this Ratzon under duress, then that's also going to be called not willing. And so how does the get work when Kfiyah is involved? Again, we're going to need a different explanation. So for different reasons, we need a different explanation for the Rush, and we need a different explanation for the Ramban. It's interesting, the Chabad Shlomo raises the question that the Gemara, which we spoke about a little bit before Yantif also, the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Pei Ches, which now it's in Yonah Diyoma as we approach Shavuos, so now that's the next Yantif on the horizon. So the Gemara says that we accepted the Torah, but we weren't totally willing, and only Purim time did we fully accept it. Right? The Gemara says, Modo Rabba La Raisa, that there is a big undermining of our accepting of the Torah, because Kaf Waleim Har Kigigis, that idea again, that the mountain was turned over our heads, and we were told we have to accept the Torah. So Rashi over there says that if we wanted to, we could defend ourselves by saying that we never accepted the Torah willingly in the first place. It was forced upon us. So to that, ask the Chemda Shlomo that why is that true according to Rambam? Right? Why don't we say that the Pintel Yid wants to observe the Torah, and therefore, even if it had to be forced upon us, why don't we draw the comparison between this and Kfiyah Beget? Right? Why don't we say that the same way you know, pressure somebody to give a get, the Rambam says ultimately it works because deep down this is what he wants. So let's say here too, that you pressure somebody to accept the Torah. So deep down, it's considered willing because that's what he wants, and he shouldn't be able to come later and say that we didn't accept it. It's funny because the Gemara at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, the Gemara suggests that the nations of the world will object that they lost out on the Kfiyah. It's interesting just to compare the two. Right? The Gemara says that the complaint will be brought against the nations of the world for not observing the Torah and they're not accepting the Torah, and they're going to be compared unfavorably to the Jews. And they're going to say, well, kum kafu alei harki gigas, did you force us like you forced them? And which, in a sense, maybe kind of supports the Rambam's position, like the idea being that the person's going to say, listen, you know, why didn't you do what's my own good and not pay attention like a child might have a complaint against his mother if, when he's a kid, his mother lets him do whatever he wants, so he plays in traffic or he doesn't go to school and he doesn't end up getting an education because the parents just don't do whatever he wants. So the kid will grow up and say, listen, it was your job to force me. It was your job to worry about my own good and about what my ultimate rutzen will be and not what I act like now. So a child would have a complaint against the parents who just would let him do whatever he wants. So too, the Gemara says, and the nations of the world will say, you didn't do what you did to the Jews. You should have treated us the same way. So that kind of brings out the Rambam's point that this is what we really want, and we need somebody to tell us. So if that's true, Taka, so then what is this Modar Rabbal Araisa? So how does this undermine anything?
Well,
Yosef?
The case of probably one of the years before the parameters and Torah existed.
Oh, so that's a suggestion you could make, which the Chanda Shlomo says he thinks that's Dolchik. He says, maybe you could say, well, once we were given the Torah, so now we all have a Pintaliyid. Is that what you're going to suggest? Then you say that maybe now it's true that after we all became Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai, so now we all deep down want to observe the Torah, but that was when it started. So before that, it's not true. So that's an interesting suggestion. Chemda Shlomo thinks it couldn't be. The Chassam Sofer actually has a tshuva where he says that he thinks that's the case. The Chassam Sofer in Orach Chaim and Siman Kuf Pei Hei says he thinks that that's Taka the story, that we're not really considered willing until after Achashverosh, until after Purim time, and that he wants to explain a few things. So, for example, our Gemara, and Baba, I keep saying our Gemara, which I think is legitimate, I guess, the Gemara we're talking about is our Gemara. So, the Gemara and Baba Basra, which is a stretch to call it our Gemara, but the Gemara and Baba Basra that we've mentioned a few times, right, so the Gemara had said that we have a sale under duress, and the Gemara compares it to get and to korban. So for get, the Gemara says maybe get is different because mitzvah l'shmo are different from it. And for korban, so the Gemara gives a different answer. Right? What is the Gemara answer the Gemara gives for korban? Why korban might not be comparable to a forced sale?
Kapar.
Because you get a kapar. So why don't you just say mitzvah there also? It's a mitzvah to bring a korban. So why doesn't the Gemara give the same answer to both? That by a korban and a get, it's a mitzvah, so that's different than a forced sale. So the Chassam Sofer says, because that was true already by Matan Torah. So by Matan Torah, we don't have this principle. It's only post Achashverosh that we all accepted the Torah willingly. So now we could say that we had the inner Pintaliyah. But, and when the Gemara is talking about it, the Gemara can say that, okay, that get, we have such a concept because mitzvah l'shmo divrei chacham. But by a korban, it's a pasuk. So how does that work? So that has to work maybe based on the kapara, not based on the mitzvah. It's a fascinating idea. Hi.
I read a continuum that said that that when Bnei Yisrael said Nasa v'nishma, that was considered to be hard to gigi, meaning it was more of a, it wasn't necessarily a literal thing. It was just, that was how they felt that pressure. Once they said like Nasa and Nishon, that was
kind of
like them forcing it upon themselves.
Well, that's what it sounds. It sounds like that's the road sign, essentially.
Yeah.
You know that's it's interesting. Just parenthetically, if you look at the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Peches, it poses to ask the question. But it's interesting how the Gemara doesn't seem to be bothered by this because the Gemara tells the story about Kafel and Harkigigis, and then in the next section, the same moment, the Gemara tells you, oh, the Malachim were so impressed with the Jews and they said Nasa and Nishma, and they said who revealed to them the secret, the guys who revealed the secret. That they know how to act, so you know, which is it? So are they very impressive because of Nasa and Nishma, or were they forced? So Tosfos asked the question, as the Medrash doesn't answer, the Rishonim discussed the conflict between the two, but it's striking that the Gemara doesn't seem to be bothered by it, that it seems to flow okay. Oh, we were forced, and that we said Nasa and Nishma, amazing, we were fantastic. So it could be that maybe this is all, again, somehow compatible, that Nasa and Nishma does reflect the Pintaliyid. And the fact that we wanted to accept the Torah, that there had to be some difference, right? There had to be some reason why Umos HaOlam, they rejected the Torah and they're not given this opportunity of Kfiya Chagigiyus. While the Jews, they get this extra chance that will pressure them and that's going to do it. So there has to be some Mida that they had shown. So presumably it is this idea of Nasa V'Nishma. And that reflects something, it just doesn't reflect the whole story. So, for example, if you want to say, like the Medrash Tanhuma says, that very often quoted Tanhuma, that Nasa V'Nishma, that was for the Torah Shebichsav. But the Torah Shebalpeh was too burdensome, they weren't ready to take that. So that, God said, sorry, it's a package deal, you have to get the whole thing together, so I'm forcing you to take everything. So we have to be able to reconcile, how is that fair, first of all, to then have it forced upon you? And again, what's impressive? So if it was all forced upon us, so what's the big deal? So we didn't really do anything to deserve this. So you have to say that it's really all one hemshich. You have to say the Nasa Nishma reflected something very significant about the Jewish people. That reflected this inner razo. But they didn't appreciate that that commitment has to include also the whole picture, including Tarsh Balpeh as well. So God says, sorry, you have to understand, if you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, that it's great that you're ready to say Nasa Nishma and you like the Tarsh Basav, but no, that's got to get the whole thing. Which is why, especially, you know, the Gemara is essentially comparing it to marriage, right? So a man who says to a woman, I love you, it's all homosexuality here, right? So a man says, I love you, I think you're wonderful, but I don't want to marry you, I don't want to take on the responsibilities of marriage, or the commitment of marriage. So we say to him, it doesn't work that way. That it's wonderful that you appreciate this woman and you realize this great qualities that she has and you want to spend time with her, but then it's all or nothing. You have to do so in the context of a full commitment. So they're both true, that yes, it's true that you deserve credit for recognizing how wonderful she is, but you also have to be forced to make a full commitment. And so too, Klal Yisrael deserves credit for recognizing how great the Torah is, but they still need to be forced to take everything else, which then all fits in. Again, that's what the Rambam is saying, that there is this very core commitment and recognition of the value of mitzvos, but you also have to then be schlepped into the whole picture and to recognize how you have to be consistent with that 100%, even when the Yetzer Hara gets in the way and waters down the commitment. So, okay, so then all of that works very well for the Rambam. The question is just then, so what's pshat on the Modo Rebel Arais? That's not really such a Modo. So then, okay, so then they are committed to the Torah. So what right do they have to then say, well, we weren't really willing, we didn't read the fine print, it was against our free will. So how do you explain that? So you could, I think this Hadithah in Ramakom was the Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva, that the Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva says ultimately the concept of Bechira Chofshitz is going to reflect something even more basic, you know, the idea that we are rewarded for our good behavior and that we are punished for our bad behavior, ultimately that reflects absolute Bechira. Reflects the idea that we are really making decisions based on our own choice and not being forced to one way or another. So, presumably, and this is something that he discusses in this sefer, that there is room to distinguish. That there's room to say that, on the one hand, the get is willing enough that it counts as a kosher get, that that's considered to be ratzon. But as far as really getting credit for the mitzvot, or really being held responsible for not following the Torah, that has to reflect the full scope of free will, and that's not there if there is duress even in the secondary level. Okay, so all of that again is to support and to address questions within the Rambam. So now, what we're left, and we'll just set this up to pick up with tomorrow, so what about the other Rishonim? Right, so if you've seen that the Rush doesn't seem to hold from the Rambam, and the Ramban we saw from a different angle also is going to have a problem working with the Rambam. So how does it work? Right? And again, they have less of a question to answer because maybe for related reasons, maybe for different reasons, they have a smaller scope of cases where Kfiyah works. Right? The Rush, that's part of it. That Kfiyah is only going to be in the cases where Chazal explicitly say so. But what makes that work if not the mitzvah l'shmoa d'var chacham? Or, asking it from the Ramban's perspective, if you're not going to be able to call this ratzon, right, the Rambam is all based on the idea that even with Kfiyah we can still call it ratzon. Right, with Kfiyah, ratzon can be compatible. And the Ramban is not going to necessarily agree with that. You're missing Ratzon. Right, so here's the two clues. Right, so somehow, according to the Rush and the Ramban, a get is valid in these cases in the Gemara, in Ksubas Daf Ayin Ches, a get is valid when forced, despite the fact that you can't really call that Ratzon. against the Rambam. And despite the fact that the mitzvah, which may exist, but is still not going to be enough to explain kfiyah. So what does it? Yosef?
Maybe the opposite of force is not no will.
Okay.
Like when Ramban says that kfiyah does not, can't create rosani, mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily mean that you need rosani to give a get. You just...
Well, we know that we need rotzon. Whether we need rotzani is a different question. We know that we need rotzon. So apparently, here, so for according to Rambam, we're okay, we have rotzon. We have forced rotzon, it's also called rotzon. But according to Ramban, if that's not called rotzon, so it seems like in these cases in the Gemara, it's working without rotzon. So then you'll have to say, right, that these cases, the get is effective kind of on a different track. And the get is effective somehow despite the lack of ratzon, and not because of a mitzvah specifically. So it would seem like what's open to say is that this comes from an approach of afkinim. And we know that the Gemara in a few places, including much earlier Maseches Ksuvos, tells us that there is an idea of afkinu rabbanan with Kiddushin Mineh, that the previous part of the sentence is called the Mekadesh, Daita the Rabbanan and Mekadesh, that we assume that when one gets married in the Jewish faith, he does so based on the either implicit or explicit premise that Chazal are okay with it, and therefore Chazal have the ability to not be okay with it. And to cancel or annul, either proactively or retroactively, or maybe both, a marriage. So maybe that's what's going on here. That maybe essentially the situations that the Talmud describes specifically, and not necessarily later generations, but the situations that are in the Talmud as being unlivable situations. So the Rabbis of the Talmud, Chazal, have decided that's not a marriage. The marriage is already inherently taken apart. And therefore, the get is now basically a formality. That it's not necessarily that the get is really necessary. But to complete the process, the husband has to actually give the get. So that becomes a whole fundamentally different understanding of kfiyah. Right, with all kinds of ramifications. Right, according to the Rambam, kfiyah is ratzon, and according to this position, maybe kfiyah is not ratzon. But a get that works through kfiyah means you don't need ratzon, because Chazal already dismantled the wedding, dismantled the marriage. And it also means it's going to be much more limited. It means that it's only going to work in situations where we've established that afkinu is applicable and not in other situations. Now, parenthetically, hopefully we'll get to discuss this as well before the Zman is over, that there is always a discussion that nowadays is afkinu an option for us, right, as a assertive policy, right, as a separate whole discussion from the kfiyah beget. What about to have a husband who's not willing to go along? Can we just say, okay, who needs you? The rabbis will get together. The Gudas Israel will get together. The RCA will get together. The chief rabbis of Israel will get together and say, afkinu. So is there any avenue for afkinu nowadays? So that's already always a raging controversy. Here, it's kind of a step beyond that. It's assuming that maybe afkinu is already the underlying structure of the cases in the Gemara where kfiyah works, and therefore it's going to be limited to that, because we're probably going to assume that it's a very, very big stretch to say afkinu is an option today. So if it's based on afkinu, it's going to have to be on the cases where the Chachmei HaTalmud established that afkinu has been operative. And therefore, again, if it's going to be a massive change in the paradigm, it means that your decision whether kfiyah works is going to be much more limited. It's going to have to be the cases in the Talmud, or cases that are close enough to the Talmud that we can say it's essentially included in that category, which you can see is going to be a very, very tricky deal. You can already imagine how the poskim are going to have to wrestle with that. Any given case today, does it or does it not match what was described in the Talmud? And that question is going to be crucial, because if kfiya is valid or not is going to affect the next step. What methods can you use in order to pressure a get? And what are the consequences of methods that may cross the line into kfiya? So it was just a first.
Does that kind of work as an annulment or like retroactively?
So that I blurred the language before, because it could be a little bit of both. We find it, this was part of the major machlokas. Again, you see, afkinu is itself a separate topic, which we hope to get to, but here we're just mentioning it as possibly the underlying structure of kfiya. So afkinu, as Ron Mechami Goldberg pointed out in an article on this topic, that we basically find two types of afkinu in the Gemara. You find it either at the moment of the marriage, where the assumption is the marriage never gets off the ground. You know, certain methods of marriage that Chazal declared, even if the Torah would be okay with it, we're not okay with it, it doesn't work. Or we find it later on also, and that's a different type. And there's a difference in terms of whether you need any kind of a get at all. That, after, you know, at the moment of the marriage, as Reb Zalman Lechemi explains, doesn't need a get at all, while after, you know, later on would need a get, although the get could be a forced get, could be a get that's not necessarily otherwise kosher. So maybe that's what we're seeing here, that maybe the cases of kfiya beget, according to the Rosh and the Ramban, will be cases where the get really is no good as far as getting the concern. But we don't really need the get, because after inu has already been employed, and therefore the get is a formality rather than actually following the rules of the get. So tomorrow, we'll have to explore what that after inu means, and that will then take us into the next stage. Again, you see, I hope it's clear how all of the practical issues that are going to come up are, not all of them, but a lot of them are going to flow directly from defining what we're trying to figure out here today. Okay, so I'll just quickly review, and then we'll dive in. So far, so good. Everybody on the same page? Just to quickly review what we spoke about today. So we mentioned how the Rambam's position that it's based on the mitzvah is expressed by a number of other Rishonim, less famously than the Rambam. The Tosfos read about the Takana regarding Moed Salai. Parenthetically, we said that may or may not be what the Rambam says about Moed Salai. We'll have to get into that. The idea that the Maharach or Zeruah quotes about Safek Kiddushin, where the rabbis force a get in that case. And the Tashbetz, who in one tshuva expresses the Rambam, and another tshuva consistently says that a situation of an obnoxious husband, you can say that that's a kal v'chomer from bad breath, and that we can force to get there also, and even though there are those who disagree, we're no slouches. So who disagrees? The Rosh seems to disagree, limits it to what the Gemara says. So the machlokus seems to be that the Rosh feels it's not based on the mitzvah, so even if there is a mitzvah, that's not going to be enough. While the Tashbetz, like the Rambam, says it's based on the mitzvah l'shmo different chachamim, and that's why he emphasizes we're no slouches, we're chachamim too, and therefore we can create what's necessary in order for this to work. And then we saw that, therefore, the Rosh seems to disagree with the whole premise, and the Ramban possibly also, because there is a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban, as far as if somebody is forced to engage in an act of arayus, is he chayiv or not? The Rambam says yes, the Ramban says no. By the way, I can add for tomorrow, if you need more Rekomos, the Rambam and the Ramban about this. Again, I didn't know in terms of how to allot your time, but I'm happy to tell you where to look. So the Ramban apparently holds that if you're forced to get to the finish line, so then that's not called willing, while the Rambam in both places is saying that if you're cooperating in the end, so then the fact that we had to beat you up to get to that point doesn't matter. In the end, it's called Ratzon, and that's consistent with both places. And then we saw also that the Chem Shalvar is the question of why does the Gemara say that we have an excuse not to follow the Torah because of the compulsion, why don't we say Pintel Yid? So you could suggest that we didn't have a Pintel Yid yet until the Torah was given, until after it was endorsed in the time of Achashverosh, which Chaim Shlomo thought was Shver, the Chassam Sofer thought actually is possible, and that maybe that's why even Karbanos, the Kfiyah, wouldn't work until later, were it not for the Kapara component, but the Mitzvah Lishmoa part wouldn't necessarily be activated. And we saw that maybe the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva talking about the Chira Chashkes, maybe we could say, as he discusses here, maybe we should call Pomotzi, that it's a different kind of Svar. So essentially, we were left to try to explain, so what's the other approach? If it's not the Mitzvah that does it, according to the Rambam, it's the Mitzvah that does it, and that makes Kfiyah into Ratzon. And according to the other Rishonim, we saw a disagreement on both points, that it's not going to be called Ratzon under these circumstances, and that it's not the Mitzvah that's operative. Which is not to say that there is no mitzvah. There is a mitzvah, and the Shulchan Aruch has two categories, mitzvah and kfiyah, as two distinct categories, but it's not the mitzvah that causes the kfiyah. So, what is it? So, we saw that the likely possibility is afkiinhu, that dismantles the marriage specifically in the cases that Chazal listed, and therefore the get isn't really necessary, and therefore a get under compulsion is going to be effective under those circumstances. And that's the point that we will, God willing, pick up with tomorrow. Okay. Ashrei, Ashrei Beisav.